It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Here's a one hopper to second. Could be two. Throw to Dansby. Over to first. That's going to be a double play. 4-6-3 on the double play. Hard hit ball, but directly to the second baseman, Birdie. Birdie goes to second one. Swanson to first. That's going to be a double play. Birdie runs and steals second base. If there was an element of surprise in my voice, it's because I was.
The premier baseball show in Chicago. Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel.
Pat Hughes. Surprised at the John Birdie stolen base? Must have been situational, because everybody knows John Birdie has wheels. 41 stolen bases in 2022. He led the league. And John Birdie joins us right now on 670 The Score. It is Hit and Run with me, Matt Spiegel, on a Sunday morning. John Birdie joins us on the Circa Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circa app today. John, thanks for the time this morning. How you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. The 40 stolen bases, 41 of them in 2022. You did that in 102 games. Did you know that no player in the history of the league has led the majors in stolen bases with fewer games played? That's kind of amazing.
Yeah, someone had told me that shortly after, so pretty cool accomplishment.
Yeah, that's pretty neat. Well, welcome to the Cubs. Welcome to the Scores airwaves. Let's get right to last night, though. How great was that Dansby Swanson play to end the game? How much fun was that to be on the field for and to see to end that win last night?
It was unbelievable. Still smiling about it today. And, it was a pretty special play by a really good player, obviously, a very heads-up play. And Garrett Hampson's a really good base runner, too, and just got a little too aggressive trying to go around third base there. And Dansby made a great play.
It's rare and fun as a defender to get to deke somebody like that. Like you don't get many chances. I'm thinking about like what hidden ball trick, you know. But that's right. That's kind of goofy. Like, but sometimes like pretending it's a ground ball and you can get a runner to slide. Sometimes maybe cost him 90 feet. It's have you ever had a moment on the field where you've gotten a chance to deke somebody like that with a pump fake or anything like that?
Not quite to that level, obviously, but definitely on, you know, the guy stealing a base and ball's put in play and you try to maybe deke him a little bit, or a throw down from a catcher that gets into the outfield and you may just kind of hold the tag on the guy a little longer even though you don't have the ball, just to see if you can get him to stay there and hold him from an extra 90 feet.
Yeah, I mean, you were laughing. I saw you laughing, all you guys laughing, just kind of amazed that he pulled it off in the moment. Or what was the vibe after that game finished?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it was a big game for us. We were up by three there to start the inning, and Carroll obviously gets down the line really well. So as soon as that ball's hit, my mind was like, you know, it's going to be bases loaded, two outs, you know, still a lot of pressure on us to get that final out. But Dansby, you know, making that play, it was just a lot of excitement and relief and happy to head home with the victory.
John Birdie joining us here on The Score. You reached the big leagues at age 28 after, what, 7 years in the minors? Was it seven or six?
Eight years. Mostly eight. Yeah, most of 8 years. So.
Didn't want to short you. Didn't want to short you that year. Thank you. But, man, it's got to be some resiliency required there. Did you have any moments of wanting to walk away? It's a long time, John.
Yeah. It was never that I wanted to walk away. It was just there were definitely a few moments where I thought maybe my window had closed. I'd always had the confidence in my ability that that I could play at the big league level and be successful, but it takes opportunity, and there are definitely a few times where I thought that opportunity maybe had passed me by and that I wasn't going to get a chance to, but I always had a jersey, and so I felt like I always had a chance to continue and be able to make that dream come true.
Well, that's interesting. So the opportunity had closed. Like, is there a certain point you think when some guys are just thought of as, well, I guess he's just a quad A player, or it's just doesn't have enough. There's probably guys who are good enough to play down there at age 27, 28, 29 who don't get up.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially that 28 age season for me in 2018. There's a lot of moving parts, a lot happening, and that was definitely the year where I found myself back in double A at the age of 28, thinking, man, maybe it had passed, but I just try to continue to get better and learn and be as good as a player as I could be, and fortunately worked out for me.
So what was it, you think, that opened up? Was it a specific situation in Toronto, or was there one person in the system who was like, no, I do think he's ready? Looking back, why'd you get the break, you think?
When I went back to Double A that year from Triple A, worked with hitting coach there, Hunter Mentz. He's now, I believe, the assistant still in the big leagues with Toronto, and worked on a few things mechanically with my swing and was able to kind of maybe unlock some more ability in there and finished the year really, really well. And then I think there was a couple injuries late in the season, and I had been with the organization for so long and had such a good year that year that I think they just wanted to reward me for it. And when I got up there, I played well and it opened the door for me to head to Miami and start my rest of my big league career there.
Bunch of good years in Miami. And then last year, a member of the Yankees. I mean, a lot of injuries in your season, but pretty damn memorable for a few different things, including this. A started first base in the ALDS last year against the Royals for your first time ever at first base. That's crazy. It's just the fifth time a player has made his first career start at a position in the history of postseason play. Was it something? Did you have a first base mitt? Like, how did this even come up, this opportunity?
Yeah, so I did have a first base glove that I had gotten a few years back that I still have. That's probably still not broken in as well as it should be. And I kind of had just gotten it. Don Mattingly was our manager at the time in Miami, and I just kind of was floated the idea to him. Hey, you know, if you ever need someone to play first base, I can work on it or something. And didn't think anything would really come of it. And then this past year when Riz got hit with the pitch, I think it was the last game of the season for us, felt like there might be an opportunity there. So the next day when I went to the field, I was heading to Aaron Boone's office to let him know, like, hey, like, we got a week or so to prepare for this because we had the bye of the wild card round. And he kind of met me in the hallway, and we both had the same idea. He asked me, have you ever played first before? And even though I hadn't, I was ready to learn. And so for that week leading up to the ALDS, got a crash course in how to play first base.
So, I mean, I'm looking now at the baseball reference page. It doesn't list the first base start, I guess, because it's not regular season. But, like, there's second base, there's third base, there's short. All that's left is catcher. So, pitcher, obviously. Only five people have done that in baseball history. Are you the next guy to do nine positions in one game, in nine innings?
I've tried to get some managers in the past to let me do it, and it didn't work out. So, I'm not opposed to it, but I just we'll see.
Who'd you ask? Who'd you ask? Did you ask Mattingly?
Yeah, I asked Donnie.
That's amazing.
Well, on deaf ears, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. And, I mean, that guy. How was talking hitting with Don Mattingly? That must have been fun.
It was awesome. I really enjoyed playing for Donnie, and just such a wealth of knowledge of the game in general, but obviously he's such a great hitter, and just picking his brain any way we could was awesome.
So John Birdie is here with us from the Cubs. I got to tell you, man, especially through these first few games in Arizona, this looks like a crisp, solid, like button-up team. You know what I mean? Like, it just looks like you guys know what you're doing, and that means you can win games in the margins. Like, you know, you can win games even if you don't get a lot of bombs or that kind of thing. You've been around some good teams. You agree with the way this bunch looks?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's what we take a lot of pride in. Good sound defense, good clean base running, and the offense will take care of itself. But obviously, through 162 games, offense can come and go, but if you can play good defense and good smart baseball, then you're going to give yourself a chance to win a lot of baseball games.
Hey, John, in Japan, after that first game, it was kind of a rough one. You went 0-for-2, had the error in the middle of the infield. I was damn talk show hosts, those sports radio guys, they're the worst, don't you think? I was out there. I was like, John Birdie, I think, will be on the bench in game two. I didn't say you should. I wasn't like ripping you, for the record, okay? But I was suggesting that you'd probably grab some bench and we'd see Vidal Bruján or something like that. And counsel's like, hell no. Birdie plays. He goes 3-for-4, makes several excellent defensive plays. Radio guys can look like an idiot. And there I was, looking like an idiot. It's like, what were the conversations? Like, were you expecting to sit, or were you expecting him to send you right back out? What did you think?
I thought I was going to play game two, but you never know what's going on. And whenever I get the opportunity to play, I expect to play well and help this team win any way I could. And obviously, game one didn't go the way I wanted or a lot of the team wanted, obviously. But, there's 162 games for a reason. And so you can't dwell on any one of them, good or bad or indifferent. And you just got to come prepared and ready to play.
Are you a guy who puts on sports radio on the way home or no from the ballpark?
I guess fortunately for you, I don't. So. You could have got away with it. I would have had no idea.
And here I am. I told on myself instead. Blew it. I totally blew it at that point. Who was your favorite player growing up, John?
I had a few different ones. I really enjoyed watching Ken Griffey Jr., Chipper Jones, guys like that. Really just loved the way they played the game. And Griffey with that swing, man. I mean, it's just such a picture-perfect swing that's pretty awesome to watch as a kid.
Hey, John, thanks so much for the time, man. Nice to talk to you, and I'll say hello next Friday at the home opener. Keep killing it.
Sounds good. Looking right. Forward to it. Thank you.
Man. Thank you. It's John Birdie from the Chicago Cubs, who will, be an important part of this team. I'm glad he laughed. Yeah, I was the guy like, man, Birdie had a rough game. They're totally going to sit him down. Nope. Nope, nope, nope. Yeah. So only five players in history, I thought it was more than that, have done the nine positions and nine innings thing, the goofy-ass thing. Cesar Tovar was one of the first ones. Bert Campanaris did it, and Cesar Tovar, my old partner Dan McNeil, used to say, instead of Shana Tova, when it would get to New Year time for the Jewish religion, he would say Cesar Tovar, and a Cesar Tovar to you. So I always think of that. Scott Sheldon of the Rangers against the White Sox, Shane Halter of the Tigers, and Andrew Romine. Was he a Cub briefly, Andrew Romine? Didn't he pitch? Romine, because his brother was on the Cubs. Austin Romine was the catcher. I believe Andrew and Austin were briefly a battery for the Cubs. They were a brother battery.
Yeah, Andrew Romine was with the Cubs in 2021.
Okay, yeah, and he pitched to his brother, making them one of very few brother tandems to have been a pitcher-catcher battery. I'll take Wes and Rick Ferrell as another pitcher-catcher brother battery. I don't know how many there are of those, Robbie.
Well, you didn't mention Carlton Fisk.
No, I did not. Let's see. Brothers battery MLB. What do we got? Mort and Walker Cooper. The All-Star game. That's pretty amazing. Here's the Andrew Romine story. Yeah, Norm Sherry. I mean, this is what people come for, I think, on a Sunday morning. They come for me, for this. Norm and Larry Sherry in 1962, and Bobby and Billy Shantz in 1954 and 1955. That's for you. That's for my dad. At age 91, I'm off to go see my dad, the archetypal baseball fan himself, me and the Rubster, the associate producer who hasn't been here the last 2 weeks. I know. He's got to get here. Frankly, he doesn't want to come to work. I'll be honest with you.
I get it.
Right? It kind of makes some sense when you think about it. We got a lot to do left here on Hit and Run. We've got 45 minutes left, and we will throw the phone lines open for you at 312-644-6767. But when we come back, you'll hear from Jed Hoyer on the trade that is in a lot of Cub fans' mind and some context on what it means to make a deal like that. That's next. Blue Pits coming up as well here on The Score.
Nerds! Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like filling out basketball brackets. Too many choices, too much noise, and no one wants a busted budget. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break down real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Make smarter financial plays today. No luck required. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out, procrastination, putting it off, kicking the can down the road. In, plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out, carpet in the bathroom. Like, why? In, knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Cam Smith turned 22 in the first spring training game of the year, and here he is in his big league debut and his first ever at bat. Ground ball, right side, base hit. One pitch, one hit. Cam Smith delivers. Pena first to third. He's safe.
Welcome to the show, Cam Smith.
Not wasting a second for his first big league hit.
First pitch he sees, singles to right. And the Astros have runners at the corners with one out.
The premier baseball show in Chicago. Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel.
That call from Todd Callis. From the, what was the Astros television network? What are they called?
That would be the Space City Home Network.
Space City.
Space City.
Todd Callis, a former guest on the PBP, Voices of Baseball podcast. I love that show. God, that host is just, the host is handsome. You know what I mean? He's like, he's just very good looking. And the producer's, he's all right.
Yeah, I mean, if it wasn't for the producer, though, I don't know if the questions would be as good. You know, very thorough, a lot of research,
Simmer down. Simmer down.
And apparently now they're on YouTube, so that's pretty cool.
Oh, that's true, actually. The PBP is on YouTube. In fact, before we get to Jed Hoyer, which I wanted to get to, let's get to a little teaser on the PBP, which is indeed on YouTube, and it's on the Odyssey app, and it's everywhere that you can get your podcasts. We're entering season 3 of the PBP Voices of Baseball. Our producer emeritus is Ryan Porth. We call him the producer emeritus so we can still ask him to do stuff. So he's got a title. But the producer these days is Robbie Triano. And our guest this coming week is the great Dave Sims, who at age 54 took the Mariners job. And after 18 years with the Mariners, is now the voice of the New York Yankees. A 50-year resident of New York is Dave Sims. And now he's the voice of the Yankees with his good friend, Susan Waldman. So they do Yankees games together, thrilled for Dave Sims. Had a chance to catch up with him just before opening day. He was riding the Peloton as he spoke to us because he's committed to getting that burn in. And we had a great conversation. And among things we talked about was the opportunity he would have to pay homage to John Sterling if he chose to do so in his first broadcast as the Yankees radio voice.
People keep asking me, not you, but the other, I've never done so much media in my life, but which is, it is the Yankees after all. The legacy of John Sterling, I said, he's already made that legacy. Well, how are you going to follow him? I have no intention of trying to be John Sterling. I had no intention of being Dave Niehaus when I went to Seattle. And I wanted to say, why the hell are you asking me that question? You wouldn't ask somebody else that question. What the hell is that all about? It sort of irked me. It's like, why would you even consider that? I mean, God bless John. I know John since 1977 when I was covering the Nets, and he was the voice of the Nets, or the radio voice of the Nets. I was like, why would somebody think I'm going to come in and do John Sterling? What, I look like Rich Little?
Did anybody expect you, or did you ever even consider to break out, it's Grand Salami time in Seattle and do a knee house for a split second?
So freaking lutely not.
So no on that. Ah, man. And I asked him if he would ever consider doing the Yankees win. The Yankees win. And his answer on that is awesome. You gotta go grab the podcast, the PBP Voices of Baseball, when it comes out on the Odyssey app and everywhere you get your podcasts. It'll come out on Tuesday. Make sure you catch that. I love talking to baseball play-by-play folks, and we'll do so all season long. Tuesday episodes and Thursday episodes on that. All right, I mentioned Jed Hoyer was on with me, Matt Spiegel, and Lawrence Holmes the other day, and we had a chance to ask him about the highlight guy that you heard coming in, not Tad Callis, but the guy who had the highlight, the guy who made the play where Todd was doing the highlight up. That would be Cam Smith. So asked Jed Hoyer about Cam Smith and whether it's fair for fans to compare Cam Smith to Kyle Tucker, who homered last night, or compare Cam Smith to Matt Shaw, who also homered last night. And here's how the conversation went with Jed Hoyer.
That is the nature of these jobs, right? There's definitely deals I can think of that I won't share where we ended up having a really successful deal and we were actually targeting a different guy, you know? And that happens, you know, and there's other times I think you target the right guy and, you know, he gets hurt or whatever. So I do think that, I've always felt like, you know, the best teams, they have good processes and they're transactional and you're not going to hit on all of them, but if you have a good process and you evaluate well and you kind of stick to that, I think, you know, usually those things balance out over time.
Arrieta and Strope for Scott Feldman as a sign-in flip is one of the great trades in Chicago sports history, to be honest. And I remember talking to you and Theo at Del Frisco's when we did a thing in like 2017 or 16, I don't remember. But I remember asking Theo, hey, how about that guy Kevin Gausman on Baltimore? Do people want that guy too? And he shot me a look like, everybody wants that guy. Everybody. So, like, yeah.
That's a good example. Gausman's a great example of, we messed that one up, you know, like, we targeted him for years, and he went, I'm trying to remember the exact order, but I want to say he went to Cincinnati first and then went to the Braves, and we had a chance to, he wasn't successful there, and we had been trying to trade for this guy for years, and then we didn't go after him after that. Cause like, oh gosh, I guess we might've been wrong on that evaluation. And then he signed the 1 year deal with the Giants and took off. So that was a really good lesson for me, where like, when you like a guy like that and you identify him, don't give up, like, just because he stumbled somewhere else. And these paths these players take are far from linear. And I think that's like that's something I try to remember all the time too. Kevin Gausman was a highly regarded, you know, first round guy who struggled and on his fourth team hit it. Right. And it's just, that's the nature of these players sometimes.
Yeah. Gausman. I'll never forget that look on Theo's face when I asked him about Kevin Gausman, because for a while there, the Orioles were the sucker at the table. And that's how you get Arrieta. And that's how you go out and get Gausman. There was like there was a while there where you as an organization could be sending your scouts and getting your video and having your people look at the shape of pitches. And you knew that your pro scouting department was ahead of their internal development department. And that's what people knew about the Orioles. Oh, and what a glorious time that was. And frankly, it's what people knew about the White Sox at one point for a while. And it was interesting to hear from Corey Lee earlier on in the show about how that no longer seems to be the case with the White Sox, which is a great sign. But there was a while there where everybody knew that you could go to Baltimore and find some really good arms that were not being maximized. And that was the belief and the desire on Gausman. So, man, Arrieta and Strope is the trade that Jed came up with when I asked him for a comp on the Cam Smith and Matt Shaw thing. And it's nice that we're here on a morning after Shaw has homered last night in a pinch hit roll, big smile on his face as he rounded the bases, because Cam Smith is good. Just 32 games in the minor leagues. I think it's like 125 plate appearances in the minor leagues for Cam Smith. Third fewest in the history of Major League Baseball for a position player going from draft to the big leagues. And you'll forever wonder, and Jed wouldn't answer, whether they would have taken Matt Shaw, you know, and whether the Cubs could have gotten them to take Matt Shaw instead. But maybe Matt Shaw will be better. To me, that's what I'll look at. I will look at this year Cam Smith results and Matt Shaw results, because Cam Smith, a third baseman by trade, now playing out there in right field for Houston, and Matt Shaw playing third base for the Cubs. Very interesting start to the season for the Cubs, who take 2 out of 3 in Arizona with a fourth game coming up later on this afternoon. You'll hear it right here on The Score. And things look a lot better and a lot cleaner than they did in Japan, those two games in Japan. And there's a lot of good things. There's a lot of things you can notice as you're watching this team play that even aside from the results, I always like to say you can't fake baseball, because if you got to watch the whole games and notice certain things. I'll give you one. There's a part of the ball game that has become to me very necessary for offenses to produce when given a chance, and that is the tender underbelly of the pitching staff. Because it's hard to find those spots. Like, if you're trailing, especially, and you're going up against a team in the eighth inning and the ninth inning, you are facing unbelievable stuff. And very often in the seventh inning as well. But when you're going up against a starting pitcher his third time through the order, you got to be producing as an offense. And if it's not the starting pitcher third time through the order, then it's probably the fourth guy out of the bullpen. You know, and not everybody is deep enough to have four guys they really feel good about out of the bullpen. That's your spot. So last night, sixth inning off a tiring Brandon Pfaadt of the Arizona Diamondbacks means third plate appearance. Okay. And I'm watching. That's it. You know, Kyle Tucker in his third plate appearances against Pfaadt goes deep. He had three hits by then, had the double, the automatic double. Not the ground rule, call it an automatic, or Boog Sciampi will yell at you. Had the single, and then had the home run with his third plate appearance. Sixth inning, bottom of the order for a third plate appearance against Pfaadt. And, you know, pitchers seldom go six these days. That's a spot where I'm like, all right, they're going to take out Pfaadt or let him in. They let him in. Pete Crow Armstrong, hard hit fly ball out to right field. Miguel Amaya, a blistering ground ball down the line. Sweet play by the third baseman for the Diamondbacks. Both of those at bats. All right, got good wood on the ball. Got a lot of the barrel. Hit it hard. Exit velocity nice and strong. Those are outs in the box score. But if you're watching, you're like, all right, good. That's a good sign. PCA and Amaya with real good at-bats there and good hard contact in the sixth inning. Outs in the scorebook, but good hard contact, and that will only help feed their confidence. And I need to see good hard contact in moments like that. Similarly, Dansby Swanson, who looks really good, really sharp in just about every facet of the game, he ripped a line drive in the first that Perdomo made a great play on, would have driven in a run. I'm looking at that. Because managers look at that and talk to their players about it. Hitting coaches look at that. Players remember it. Hell, Hawk used to call it a hang with them. You know, like, oh, you hit that one hard, but it didn't go your way. That's all right. Hang with them. You gotta hold on to stuff like that. The game's too difficult. Game is too hard to not take away good feelings from really strong at-bats like that. That lead to good hard contact. So you look at that stuff and you feel good about it. Stuff like on Thursday when PCA is beating out what would have been a fielder's choice with just pure speed going to second base. And you could say it was a questionable decision by the D-backs shortstop at the time. You got to know your speed, know your personnel on the base paths. But either way, PCA's speed beating that out extended the inning, and then Miguel Amaya hits a three-run double off the glove of Corbin Carroll because of PCA's speed. You saw PCA's speed last night, scoring from first on that double to the gap. And, you know, like the base running and the defense, the little things like that, it matters. To see it. And you know when you're seeing a good, clean ball club that's playing good ball and it's also making good contact, like some of those outs that I'm talking to you about. That stuff can matter as you're watching baseball. That is for damn sure. It's Hit and Run here on The Score. It's me, Matt Spiegel, who you're with. We're up with you up until the top of the hour. We'll come back and do some blue pits for you and continue to take your phone calls and texts. So 312-644-6767. Keep it right here on Hit and Run on The Score.
Now a little bloop single and the Cubs can take the lead.
Bloop hits with Matt Spiegel on Hit and Run.
Time for bloop hits. Where we look around the league, give you little tidbits and nuggets that we think are cool and awesome and fun. And they come with Robbie Triano's very very high-level bloop hit sound effect. It evolved last week during the show. It was really terrible, and then it was mildly better.
I mean, that's your opinion.
And then it was a lot worse. So I don't know what it's going to sound like. Are we staying with the one that you finished with last week?
I think we're going to do the one I finished with.
Okay. All right. Let's hear. So basically, folks, just to remind you, a bloop hit should be a crack of the bat and then the ball going up into the air and then falling in between the infielders and outfielders in short center field. So let's hear what the first blue pit sounds like. Yeah, it's very strange. Wilson Contreras was going up to the plate and had some tape around the handle of his bat, and he decided he didn't want it on his bat anymore. So what did he do? Let Chip Carey tell you about it.
Contreras is chewing on the tape. And he'll chew some more as he's down on strikes. Fourth strikeout for Ryan. This will be the tail of the tape.
Yeah, why use a pocket when you could just eat it, you know? Kind of like kids in glue.
I don't understand what the hell is happening. Folks, if you haven't seen it, he rips the tape off and puts it in his mouth and chews it. Did anybody see a swallow of the tape? I have not visually seen that. I've been scouring the internet, and I haven't found anybody eating tape off a bat or confirmation that Wilson Contreras did indeed swallow the tape. You just chew it and spit it out? I don't know.
Maybe he just hates littering. Maybe, like, that's his thing. He loves being a he loves the earth, but maybe that. Or he was hungry. He needed a snack.
I don't know.
Maybe it's fruit by the foot.
Is he insane? What the hell is going on? If anybody knows about what happened to the tape, if it was swallowed or spat out, please give it to me. This is very, very important. Time for another Blue Pit. Oh my God. Welcome to the big leagues. Christian Campbell of the Boston Red Sox. He has a home run. He pumped his fist for the second of probably 100 fist pumps that you'll see from him during the course of his debut week. He's very excited about that. And he almost made an absolutely great catch, a full-speed diving catch in left field. This is a middle infielder by trade, playing the outfield so they can get his bat and his speed in. The Red Sox are loaded with kids, and Campbell has looked great so far. Meanwhile, Rafael Devers, now a full-time DH, struggling as much as, say, a Suzuki, a full-time DH. In fact, even more. Through Devers' first three games, 10 strikeouts. 10! Dude didn't want to leave third base, but did. I suspect he will come back around, but that is the most strikeouts through the first three games of a season by anyone in the history of baseball for Rafael Devers. Time for a couple more Blue Pits. How about debuts in MLB from dudes who had weird jobs? Hayden Sanger, the Mets catcher, has worked at Whole Foods the last two off seasons. He made his way from Whole Foods to the big leagues. Brad Lord of the Washington Nationals spent his mornings working at the Home Depot this past off season. Now he's in the Nationals bullpen. And J.J. Escara, the Yankees catcher, a former Uber driver and substitute teacher. These are all big leaguers on opening day. So, folks, I don't know what job you're out there doing. You're working at Office Max. You're hosting a radio show like me. We've got a chance. Maybe we could be big leaguers by next league.
Yeah, I was going to say, we have a pretty weird job ourselves. What is the weirdest job you've had outside of the radio world?
Oh, I will win that. I will win that. My job, I will describe it to you when we're done with Blue Pits. The Dodgers are preposterously good. Through five games this year, the Dodgers are 5-0. They've scored more than 30 runs. They've drawn more than 20 walks. They've hit more than 10 home runs. Their pitching staff has 55 strikeouts. Their defense has not committed a single error. You put those stats together, no team in the history of baseball has ever done that over any five-game span, ever in any game. Any season. They're ridiculously good. Roki Sasaki pitched last night. He was wild, as he was in Japan. He had a 41-pitch first inning. But he's pretty good. And oh, by the way, Mookie Betts, who lost 20 pounds with illness and had to miss the two games in Japan, he's back. He had two homers the other night, including this one at the end.
Betts. Goes on left field and turns out the lights. He rings the bell with a three-run walk-off home run.
Mookie Betts with the walk-off homer. He's unbelievable. He's still my favorite player in the game. I mean, even after the weight loss and the illness and as harrowing as that all seemed. It's funny, I had a guy last week texting me saying, who do I take at number two? Who do I take at number two in my fantasy baseball league? Shohei will go one. Who do I take at number two? That guy's the answer. That guy's the answer, especially because of the positional flexibility. You know, you can play him all over the place. What an unbelievable asset he is to a real team, let alone a fantasy baseball team. And oh, by the way, good news for the Dodgers as Shohei Ohtani will now start ramping himself back up as a pitcher. Good. That team really needs a little something extra. Don't you think? And down in Miami, the nephew. On day one, my nephew Jack McMullen, the play-by-play voice for the Marlins on the radio, got Sandy Alcantara and Paul Skeens. And they were both dealing on opening day. And that game ended with a walk-off win by the Marlins, the first in the history of the Marlins organization on opening day. And then yesterday, the Marlins had another tie game in the ninth inning, And the nephew got to do this again.
And the 1-2. Myers lines out to right. That is plenty deep enough. Sawinski is back. It one hops over the wall. And the Marlins walk it off again. There's some March magic in Miami. Dane Myers, your hero tonight.
Dane Myers is the dude. And Jack McMullen on the call. 2 out of 3 games, the Miami Marlins start with walk-off wins at home. And those are some of your blue pits from around the major leagues. Got a few minutes to hop in if you want to at 312-644-6767. Matt Spiegel here with you on Hit and Run. Looking at the slate of games across MLB. The A's and the Mariners in Seattle is the last game in the afternoon. And then there is a night game. You've got Sunday Night Baseball tonight. It is Nick Pivetta and the San Diego Padres going up against A.J. Smith-Shawver. And the Atlanta Braves. The Braves are a very, very interesting team. Very, very interesting team to look at. Cubs and Sox, I'll give you their details in a few moments. But first, let's go to the phone lines and pick it up with Riggs on 670 The Score. You're on Hit and Run with me, Matt Spiegel. Good afternoon or good morning or whatever the hell time of day it is. What's up, Riggs?
Hey, Spiegs. I agree with your theory about Suzuki's anxiety. And I think you see it on the base pass, too. He's a terrible base runner. And so in the second game in Japan, I think it was Kirby Yates who threw him 3 straight sliders up and away in the zone. And the third one on strike 3 was in the catcher's mitt before he swung. And from that point forward, he's been awful. Question to you, how long does Council leave him in the 3 spot? And how long before he needs his annual reset on the bench?
Yeah, man, that annual reset is a real thing that has happened. And, you know, it's clear. And they'll tell you, sometimes when you read between the lines that, I mean, it's a very difficult thing to scout. They didn't know. They didn't know that this was part of the makeup. And it's a worry. It's a worry when you take away something like playing in the field for a guy who thought of himself as a 5-tool guy. You remember the comp? I remember the specific player comp that came up a lot with, say, a Suzuki. And it was A.J. Pollock. That was the specific comp that came up a lot. And A.J. Pollock, for those who don't remember, was a really good 5-tool center fielder at his peak in Arizona. And there was talk about, say, even being able to be a center fielder, let alone a right fielder. But there is some human anxiety that's out there. Remember, we have seen the interpreter get replaced and fired along the way in trying to build up a better level of communication between management / manager and ball player. In Seiya Suzuki. So, yeah, it's a good question on the 3-hole. There's some interesting things that we'll be watching Craig Counsell on in terms of the early going. I'll give you another one. I want Miguel Amaya out there as much as possible. I didn't like that Miguel Amaya was sitting on night number 2 stateside after having the 5 RBIs on night number 1. And then there he comes back on night number 3 and has 2 more RBIs, right? Or I guess 1 more. I had the double to drive in PCA. But, you know, Carson Kelly, good, solid veteran. Maybe you want to give him a revenge game out there in Arizona. I don't know. Maybe Jameson Taillon wanted to pitch to Carson Kelly. Maybe he doesn't love pitching to Miguel Amaya. I'm not sure. But the way the Miguel Amaya looks right now at the plate, I want that guy out there as much as possible. This is Steve listening on the Odyssey app on Hit and Run on 670 The Score. What's up, Steve? How are you?
Good, man. How are you doing?
Great.
Yeah, I want to talk about the Cam Smith trade. So Jed got rid of Schwarber, nothing back. He gets rid of Cam Smith. This is going to be horrible. And we're not talking about the third baseman either, Paredes, because who we gave up for Paredes, too. So that you add that all together, that's like 5 players for somebody that we're going to have for 1 year.
Well, you know, look, combining a few different things in there. The Schwarber decision a few years back was Theo and Jed, and that was right. Was it Theo and Jed, or was Theo gone? No, I think it was Theo and Jed. And anyway, but let's talk about now. I got no problem giving up Isak Paredes for a year of Kyle Tucker. I got no problem giving up Hayden Wesneski for a year of Kyle Tucker. Those two I got no problem with. Giving up a prospect in addition, I understand. Giving up a prospect as good as Cam Smith, worrisome. But remember, Paredes, you got for Christopher Morel. I mean, that's a good trade tree right there to turn Paredes into a year of Kyle Tucker. I'm totally cool with that. Cam Smith, I don't know. I tried to ask Jed the other day. I wonder if they would have taken James Triantos. I wonder if they would have taken Kevin Alcantara, if you would have offered those things. I wonder if they did. A lot of times, you know, you give them a list of prospects and they make their pick, or they give you a list and you make your pick, that kind of thing. And they had decided that Shaw was close and Cam Smith wasn't quite ready. And Houston decided, no, we think he's ready. And there it is. Look, very, very fun hit and run with you. Sunday mornings are going to be great fun. Thank you to Robbie Triano for a great job over there on the other side of the glass. Thank you to the Cubs helping us out with John Birdie and the White Sox helping us out with Corey Lee. And thank you to those players for being on the show. Thank you to Steve Stone for being on the show. Thank you to you, the Score listener, for hanging around and being with us right here. Coming up later on in the day, it'll be the Cubs and the D-backs. Remember, by the way, that this Friday, Marshall Harris and Layla Rahimi will be at Sluggers in Wrigleyville as they broadcast live from 10 to 12:45 before the home opener on the north side. And then Zach Zabin will then have the pregame show up until first pitch. It's all brought to you by Circa Sports Illinois. Sports betting the way it should be. And then after that game on Friday, it'll be the Spiegel and Holmes show late on Friday afternoon, live from the radio booth there at Wrigley Field. Have a wonderful Sunday, everybody. Matt Spiegel signing off, saying thanks for listening to Hit and Run here on The Score.